I'm very happy today. As you know, the program is here is called the Slippery Slope of Lipids and Other Medical Issues. So we're going to start, as part of our program, segments that are called Get to Know Your Body.
Okay.
Because a lot of people either forget or don't really understand what our bodies, everything about our bodies and what our body parts do. So today we're very lucky. We have a guest, Dr. Melvin Katzen, and I'm going to introduce him. He is the owner and doctor of Southwest Florida Regional Imaging Center. There's an office in Port Charlotte and Punta Gorda. And he was chief of radiologists at the hospital. At that time, it was called Medical Center from 1969 to 2002. And he started the imaging centers in 1969. He also is a board certified radiologist, board certified in nuclear medicine, and board certified in radiation therapy. And we're going to talk about, yes, Uncle Ray. He's one of my uncles who says we always are talking about, we've been talking mostly about women's issues the past because of the menopause. So we're going to talk about the prostate, which men have. So Dr. Katzen, could you tell us something about the prostate and why men only have a prostate?
Sure. Nice to be here with you this morning.
And good morning.
And we need to know a little bit about how the prostate began in each male child. Up until the eighth or ninth week of gestation, the male and female urinary tract is very similar. And from the urethra, which is the tube that takes urine from the bladder to the outside, a small bud starts in both little boys and little girls. In little boys, it gets to be bigger, and it becomes the prostate. In little girls, there is a remnant called the skene gland. And as we get as gestation continues, the prostate develops, and it becomes a manifold. And what do I mean by a manifold?
Yeah, what is a manifold?
A manifold is a term we use in the mechanics where a vessel has a lot of inputs and only one output.
Okay.
And really, the prostate is like that. So what are the inputs? We all know what the output is in the man. So I hope all you guys know what your output is. But the inputs into this manifold are the come from the testicles, where the sperm is manufactured, and from the seminal vesicles where the sperm is stored, and from the prostate gland, which produces liquid material, which is basically a liquid material that is designed by Mother Nature to counteract the acidity of the vagina so that the sperm will live a little bit longer.
And do its job.
And do
the
its
whole
job.
Idea is for the sperm to do its job and to live longer.
That's correct. And all these organs come together in this gland we call the prostate, which weighs in most young men, about a half an ounce. As we get older, the prostate gets bigger because of the exposure to the male hormone, testosterone. And the prostate also develops different zones, a central zone, a peripheral zone, a right lobe, and a left lobe, and a median lobe.
And it all encircles like a donut, right, around the urethra, which is the tube that goes from the bladder out to the outside.
Right. Since the prostate started from these little buds that were in the ureter stays right smack in the center of the prostate. As we get older, the prostate gets a little bit bigger. And one part of the prostate that may get bigger in an inappropriate way is called the median lobe. And that is a lobe that is right immediately behind the urethra. And when that gets larger, it narrows the opening of the tube that takes urine from the bladder to the outside. and men can have trouble avoiding hesitation, having the feeling that they're not emptying their bladder completely, and also having to void more frequently because they can't empty their bladder frequently.
Right. They have to go at night a couple of times. That's called nocturia. They have to push hard sometimes, or they dribble. These are also signs of prostate problems, right?
That's correct. Now, because the prostate is where it is, between the bladder and the outside, it also is subject to all the kind of abuse that might occur if someone has an infection in the urinary tract. So if somebody has an infection in the kidneys or an infection in the bladder, it's likely that that infection will involve the prostate as well. And so the prostate is very sensitive and very subject to the secondary effects of infection elsewhere in the urinary tract.
And that's called prostatitis, and a lot of times young men can get that and cause problems and pain.
Right. Now, prostatitis also causes the prostate to swell, and once again, if the prostate swells, it compresses the urethra, the tube that takes the urine from the bladder to the outside. Now, some sexually transmitted diseases will also localize in the prostate.
Correct.
As well as in other organs. But the prostate is a main target because it's attached to the organ that is involved in getting sexually transmitted diseases.
So the thing is this, if the prostate enlarges, it can become an acute medical emergency if the man cannot pass urine. And we call that acute urinary retention. That's pretty serious. Well, I mean, that's very painful.
Well, certainly, because the kidneys don't know that the bladder can't empty. The kidneys just keep making urine all the time, trying to equalize the amount of chemicals and impurities in the blood, which is what their job is. So they continue to make urine, and if it can't get out, the bladder can only get so big. And you can imagine a balloon. You can only put so much water in a balloon until finally you have a disaster on your hands. So what do people do about that?
Yeah.
Well, the simple thing to do is to see if you could pass a catheter through the penis into the bladder and relieve the obstruction, and then treat the reason why the obstruction came to begin with.
Yes. And what are the ways that people, you were going to discuss about how we look at the prostate, how we image it, and the three-legged stool you told me.
Well, many years ago, we started at the hospital in Punta Gorda. We started doing prostate ultrasound and measuring a chemical that's manufactured by the prostate called PSA, which is called prostate-specific antigen.
Which, excuse me, Dr. Katzen, I need to interject that you were the first one in this county, and he's a pioneer, bringing this technology of doing transrectal ultrasound biopsy to help men even before the urologists. Now urologists do it, mm-hmm. but you were the first in this county. Am I not correct?
I think that is correct.
Okay. Well, tell us again about the PSA and all that.
So in order to evaluate the prostate in an adult man, it really requires three techniques. The digital rectal examination is very important because tumors of the prostate are generally perceived as very hard nodules, and the prostate is in immediate contact with the rectum, so that by having the physician putting his finger into your rectum, he can feel the back of the prostate. Now, you can't see the entire prostate that way. You can't feel the entire prostate that way. But in fact, most problems that occur in the prostate do occur in that area. The other method of evaluation is by ultrasound. And especially if somebody does feel a nodule, as the ultrasonographer can see the nodule, he can actually biopsy the nodule through the rectum. Now, you would say that really hurts. But in fact, there are no pain fibers in that area.
Hmm.
And so that these biopsies, the patients will usually feel the shock of the biopsy gun propelling the needle forward to get the sample. But they, I've never had it done, but the men who I did it on, many men I did it on, would admit that they did not really have any pain from the biopsy itself. But the most important thing is if a skilled observer sees an abnormality, they can biopsy it at that time. Another imaging method, which was not available when we first started this years and years ago now, is MRI. MRI will look at the whole prostate, the part that we can't feel.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because remember, the urethra comes through the center of the prostate, and the peripheral zone, which forms as a man becomes an adult, goes circumferentially around the prostate, and a lot of that portion of the prostate is in front of the urethra, and that part you can't feel through the rectum. So by MRI now, we can get a better idea if a patient has a problem elsewhere that cannot be felt through the rectum.
Okay.
And as the role of a family physician, which at the Triana Prevention Center, when we do our examinations, we do a rectal exam to check the prostate on men, and usually at least by the age of 40, we do that, or younger. Mm-hmm. And we also encourage men we do a genital exam, and we encourage and teach men how to do self-testicular examination, which will be another program we'll talk about issues. Mm-hmm. But, and especially in young men, how to examine themselves, just like a woman has to be able to examine her breasts and needs to know her anatomy, because if there's something wrong, they can bring it up to their doctor.
Coming from a family with a history of testicular cancer, I can tell you this is an extremely important thing, and it's so overlooked by most men.
It's very, very important. But back to the prostate, Dr. Katzen. And as a family physician, I have examined many patients, and you were talking about the other part of the three-legged stool, the PSA test also.
Well, the PSA is formed by the prostate. And for reasons which we don't wholly understand, most tumors, 90% of tumors, cause an elevation in PSA. Now, the exact amount, there are normals being established for the PSA, and let's say the normal is 4. Well, some people run a higher than normal PSA regularly, and some people run a very low PSA. But your physician, if he orders a PSA, should be very cognizant of a change in that PSA. In other words, if you were normally running a PSA of 3, and all of a sudden the next year you come back with a PSA of 5, that should really require some explanation, either because you have an inflammation of the prostate, which can cause the PSA to go up, but then it should come back down after the inflammation is treated, or there's something else going on there and things are growing. So you have a tumor growing there. Now, it's very interesting as well that tumors of the prostate are sort of endemic. And what I mean by that is that if we look at men who die for other reasons, automobile accidents, war, and we examine their prostate, the detectable tumor rate is almost equivalent to the decade in which they lived. In other words, if 70-year-old men, 70% of them will have some tumor cells in their prostate.
Okay.
We're not 100% sure what makes those tumor cells become invasive and become a clinical problem, but we know that they're there. And as my man gets older, 80 and 90, then we can really expect that they, all of them, will have some tumor cells in that prostate. Now, the treating prostate cancer, prostate cancer tends to be much more aggressive when it occurs in younger men than in older men. So somebody in their 35 or 40 winds up with a prostate cancer, that's a very serious thing and needs aggressive treatment. men who were older, 75, 80, they may elect not to even have treatment after they're evaluated as to the stage of their disease. Or they may elect to be treated. But that's something that they should discuss thoroughly with their physician. In other words, what is the outlook either way?
Like a risk-benefit conversation.
Well, and the important thing, again, in the prevention arena is to say to the patient, look, get it checked out. Get your blood test done. Get your rectal exam done. Get your, what we call in our office, your male physical done. Get it checked out. Bring this conversation up to your physician, or if you don't have a physician, find one. Men need to be responsible as women to get to know their body.
Well, yes, and I think, you know, a lot of men just, I mean, it's not the thought about having somebody put their finger in your rectum is not exactly something that anybody would relish and look forward to.
Not at all.
On the other hand, it can save your life, and that's the most important thing to remember.
Is early detection of prostate cancers as important as you hear with other forms of cancer?
It is very important, especially in younger men.
I see.
Because of the general aggressiveness of the disease when it occurs in younger men, and it does occur in younger men. I remember distinctly one time had a fireman from New York. He's only 35 years old, and this was many years ago, and he eventually succumbed to that disease. Mm. And most people would say, well, how does, you know, this is a disease of old men, but it isn't always and exclusively a disease of old men. Now, there are so many treatment options available for men now. There's surgery, and there's nerve-sparing surgery for the younger fellows and for all men who want to continue to have an erection, because in the old days when they did a radical prostatectomy, took the whole prostate out, men were pretty much impotent after that surgery. But now, especially with the robotic surgery, men are not impotent. But if
which is also called erectile dysfunction, right. Where men are not able to.
Right.
And a lot of times it's very important that after they have a total prostatectomy, they also may not produce have an ejaculation. The fluid won't come out because that organ is not there to produce the fluid.
Mm-hmm. Well, somebody's disturbed that manifold that we described in the beginning.
Right, the manifold system. But I think that's very important for everyone to understand that every part of your body has a role and a function, and to learn about it and to catch things early on.
Well, there are other methods of treatment now, too. There is radioactive, several different ways of applying radiation to the prostate. There are radioactive seeds, which the radiation therapist can put in a pattern. Some urologists are doing that as well. There's freezing, where a catheter is put in through the urethra and the prostate is actually frozen.
Hmm.
And that work is at the next step of being considered just experimental. It's not in wide use now.
Okay.
And then there's also the opposite of freezing, heating with microwave.
But the most common is benign prostatic hyperplasia, which is an enlargement of the prostate, which we were discussing. It's because of testosterone is influencing the prostate as the prostate grows. When you were talking about it strangles or puts pressure around the urethra, where men have the problem where they cannot pass their urine, or it's hard, they dribble, they have the sensation they never empty. Those are the signs for prostate problems. And there's medication that will help, which will smooth the muscle, because there's muscle there to help relax so that the urine can pass. And there's also a medicine that will help block the testosterone from affecting as much the prostate. Right, Dr. Katzen?
That's correct, yes.
So, I mean, I think that men need to be aware that not all prostate problems will be cancer, but they need to get checked out to see what is it. So if they're having symptoms, would you not agree?
Yes. If you live long enough, you're going to have a prostate problem.
Mm-hmm. When so, I hear, you just mentioned, to cover it again, benign prostate hyperplasia. When I hear benign, that to me signals not a cancerous condition. So BPH would be non-cancerous, but the symptoms could be very, very similar to a cancerous condition.
The symptoms of BPH mm-hmm. occur because of the compression of the urethra.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have a tumor in your prostate, you could have compression of the urethra too. But you can have a tumor in your prostate and not have any symptoms. And mm-hmm. that's the reason why it's important to have a physician examine your prostate, and it's important to know what your PSA is. There's some controversy now over whether PSA is as valuable a test as
yes.
as we once thought. Well, those of us who have been doing PSA for a long, long time always knew that not every cancer produced PSA,
mm-hmm.
and that the exact normal level of PSA was needed to be individualized for each patient. I can recall very clearly a patient who's a patient of Dr. Trounis as well, who had, first time we did his PSA, it was way up around 13,
mm-hmm.
and that was 25 years ago. And I biopsied him 4 or 5 years in a row, thinking this is almost impossible. But in the fact of the matter is that was normal for that
from
individual.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, again... And we're now in the age of individualized personal health care. For example, that's why I always say to my patients, what were your results before? We look at today, but we gather the information from yesterday to put it all together to see, is there trends? You know, trends in the PSA, trends in blood pressure, trends in, are your blood sugar levels going up,
mm-hmm.
which we have discussed before.
Certainly. Let me just let everybody know we have about 5 minutes left. And if you have any questions or comments at this point, this is pretty much your last chance to get in. I don't want you to miss out. The numbers are 941-206-1580 or toll free 888-441-1580. The whole subject is interesting, and I'm glad we've begun approaching male issues after several weeks of focusing on women's issues. And this is a good start.
Well, I think it's really also important for the men in the audience or their ladies as well to realize that the newer treatments for prostate cancer do not leave a man impotent.
I was going to ask that because we only touched on that.
A man can still have an erection and still have a normal sexual relationship. The problem is if the only difference for a man would be is if he elects to have a prostatectomy, in other words, removing the whole gland mm-hmm. and sparing the nerves. The manifold that we talked about is disturbed, and the ejaculation, the fluid that comes out during the sex act, can't come out anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I had a patient one time ask me that they had prostate cancer, and they said that they did not want to have relationships with their wife because they were scared that if they had an orgasm, the testosterone would go up in their bodies and it would then cause them to have more cancer.
Interesting. Well, but is that true?
I can understand that because the natural history of prostate cancer is that it is a testosterone dependent tumor, and one of the ways of treating prostate cancer when it spreads is to either remove the testicles or give the patient estrogen to slow down the growth of cancer once it spreads.
Mm-hmm.
So I explained to them that they were very well treated and that this should not keep them from having sexual relationships.
Okay. So that would not make enough of a difference
no,
then I, to increase the... Okay.
No. And in the future, we will be discussing about andropause and what happens with men as they get older, because there is such a state, just like we have discussed menopause in women. So this is, you know, it's so fascinating to learn about your body. And again, we're here to help spread the word and have people learn and make it simple that they understand and they feel comfortable saying to their doctor, look, I'm having problems with erectile dysfunction. Oh, we got a caller.
Let's see if we can squeeze them in. Hi, caller, you're on the air.
I'm on the air?
Yes, can we help you?
Yes, I have a question. I'm listening to the show right now.
Yes.
And last year, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer.
Can you hear?
As a matter of fact, I'm going for a biopsy this 3rd of August, the second one. The first one, the doctor told me I had a grade 6 tumor. Now, you know, I'm not sure what a grade 6 is. I said, well, you know, so what is it? He says, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, that's about in the center. And so I chose to just not do anything but, you know, keep track of it.
Mm-hmm.
Am I doing the right thing or should I be?
Grade 6 tumor, he's taking a wait-and-see approach.
Well, I'm taking what?
A wait-and-see approach, right? You're going to follow.
Wait and see.
You're not
exactly
treating it at this point, right?
Yeah, well, this is Dr. Katzen, but I think that that's something that is really, I'm not begging off your question, but I think that there are so many different methods of treatment that you need to discuss with the person who's going to treat you. Even whether you're going to have treatment.
That
depends on how old are you, sir?
Is it what?
How old are you?
I'm 73.
73.
Okay, well, that's the people in their 70s have many, many treatment or no treatment options. So it's really important that you talk to an expert on this. And
maybe a second opinion would be in order.
Get a second or a third opinion until you're satisfied that you know enough.
Mm-hmm.
To say yay or nay to any of these treatment methods.
We are all out of time on the program, I'm sorry to say.
Stay healthy. Thank you for calling, caller.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Symptoms from alcohol or drug addiction. And now please join your hosts, Dr. Thomas Sachs of New Vision with Deborah Ray.
Good day and welcome to New Vision Service Introduction. I'm Deborah Ray, joined today by Dr. Thomas Sachs, a nationally known physician of many modalities who joins us today. Dr. Sachs, hello and welcome.
Thank you, Deborah, for being here. I'm so excited to tell everyone about the New Vision Medical Stabilization Services today.
When we talk about